Irving, thanks for taking some time with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Can you tell me what life was like before the tattoo on your arm?
Life was beautiful for me because I lived in a country called Czechoslovakia when it existed, before 1939, and living in a small city of about 7,000 people, of Jews and Catholics and Protestants, in relative harmony.
You knew everybody then? You knew your neighbors? You knew the people several blocks away?
I knew my neighbors. I went to school. It was a public school. I had friends who were both Jews and non-Jews.
Did you have any sense of what ultimately happened as you approached your teens? Was there any sense of that coming in the days, the months, the years before it happened?
Yeah, it happened step by step. The first sign of the persecution of Jews was very minimal, in fact. We were no longer allowed to go into the park, and I was no longer allowed to go to the beach. And eventually, I get thrown out of school because I'm a Jew, as is every Jewish student in the whole country. And simultaneously, all the Jewish teachers are fired.
And how old are you when this happens?
By this time, I'm 11 years old.
Do you remember the day of the train and the ride, the movement away?
Oh, yes. Well, I didn't go immediately. The Jews of my town in Slovakia, 80 or 90% were taken away in the summer of 1942. We were actually exempt from that because my father was still running his business. But eventually we had to leave, and we wound up in Hungary. And Hungary was the last place that the Jews were still in good shape until 1944. But in 1944, the remnant of the Jewish population, a large Jewish population in Hungary, was deported to Auschwitz. And of course, I remember that very clearly.
Your impressions of Auschwitz?
Arrival in Auschwitz was a rather traumatic and dramatic, because we arrived there, as it turns out, at night. And so I've been in this cattle car for 3 days and three nights, and you want to get out. So the doors are opened up, slid open, and I get off the train, and I'm greeted by guards telling me to get out and everybody else. And as we're standing in front of the cattle cars in the distance, I see flames. And that's kind of scary.
And you were with family at that time, yes? No?
I was there with my grandfather and grandmother, my aunt and cousins, my brother. And we're standing on the platform next to the cattle car. And as the line moves, I was separated from my grandfather and grandmother, and they were marched off to the buildings with the chimneys and flames. Didn't know what it was. They were told, actually, that they're going to take a shower, after which they will get a warm meal, because they've been unable to wash and shower or anything like that for days. So this is the next thing to do. Of course, they did not tell them that they're going to the gas chamber being murdered. And I was separated, so my brother and I and some other cousins were eventually tattooed on my arm and eventually wound up in the slave labor camp of Auschwitz.
And the slave laborer, what was your day like?
I worked actually with horses, draining swamps and plowing the fields. And so the whistle would blow early in the morning, maybe 4 o'clock or so. We were marched out from the camp into the field where the horses were grazing, get the horses, bring them to the stable, clean them, feed them, give them water, and then out into the field and do the work till noon, at which time we would get some soup, continue till evening, and then march back to the camp, get a piece of bread, go to sleep, and do this six and a half days a week. I just want to finish with the fact that some nights, as we came back to camp, we would be marched to take a shower. And that has its own dangers, because you are now naked going into the shower, and on many occasions there'd be a doctor in uniform look at you and determine if you should continue to live. They said what's called a selection.
And you were aware of the selection process happening.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. There were no secrets in Auschwitz.
What kept you going?
The desire to live. If you survive, that was the objective, and maybe you can even tell the story to the whole world, what was happening there.
To your point about the slow creep of it and the fact that you lived in a very beautiful community, and this happened with people that you had in days, months, weeks prior been friends with, had gone to the same events and festivities, the same beach, the same schools. How do we in our daily life, which we run at such a hectic pace now, how do we take the advice that you just gave?
I think every so often we need to sit back and reflect and understand where we are and look at where we are and see, well, what if I listen to A, B, C, D? All these people, individuals, groups, countries that are saying what they're saying. I must make a judgment that they are promoting and pushing evil or good.
Is social media as used as widely as it is today, do you feel that it helps or hinders?
It's capable of helping, but unfortunately part of the problem is because it's so available to anybody and everybody, and anytime you have a grievance and you lash out, you can do it on the media. And then you do that and you lash out against an individual or a group, or you put everybody in the same bucket, so to speak, you can now create a tremendous amount of evil because it's so available. You say something on the media, and immediately it's there for all to look and listen. And there are those who will be, unfortunately, influenced by it and influenced for evil.
Irving, thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure.